This is Cyber Defense Radio with your host and cybersecurity expert, Gary Malefsky. Gary brings to you another globally recognized cybersecurity executive in the hot seat today.
I have the honor and pleasure to have in my hot seat a very special guest. It's Mark Weinstein. He's one of the inventors of social media. He's the author of a new book. You can get it on Amazon, Restoring Our Sanity Online. His website is www.markweinsteininventor.com. We'll put up on the screen. And at the end, we'll probably get some email info for Mark if you want to reach out to him. But Mark, welcome to the hot seat today.
Gary, it's great to be here. And this is, you know, we've got such great hot topics to talk about. Everybody, hold on to your hat, hold on to your seat.
You know, Mark, what was the genesis of this book? And tell me, you know, a lot of people wonder the difference between privacy and anonymity.
Well, you know, first, the genesis of the book. For everybody, very, very simply, I've been in social media for about 26 years. So from the beginning, back in the 90s, what we called community portals. And I, you know, am considered one of the inventors of social media, because there's probably about 100 of us around the world who ideated at the same time. My first two, Super Family and Super Friends, were PC Magazine top 100 sites in Web 1, 3 years in a row. Fast forward to Web 2, you know, I built a company, a site that's still around. It's called MeWe. I'm the founder of MeWe. I left MeWe about nearly 3 years ago. There's a new management team there moving that product into Web 3. You know, I've been around social media for a long time, and MeWe was built to counter this sort of the surveillance capitalism, it's called, of Web 2 that Facebook popularized, as did Google, in search. Listen, everybody, you know, we are not the customer in social media today. We are the product that is served to the customer, and the customer is advertisers, marketers, political operatives, and nefarious countries overseas with their countless thousands of bots and trolls manipulating our thoughts, our opinions, our votes, and our purchase decisions. So MeWe wasn't enough. And so I took 2.5 years to ideate and write the framework for the restoration, really the reinvention of social media, where we are the users again, just like we were in Web 1, which was fantastic. Web 1 was really the ideation of how do we use technology to make a more loving world, to be more connected with our family and friends and like-minded folks that we wanted to meet around the world. And there was no such thing as a bot or a troll or boosted content in Web 1.
So now we're into Web 2, and we've got bots and trolls, and we've lost our privacy. People, I think they install VPNs thinking they'll gain privacy or anonymity. I'm curious what you think about those pieces of technology.
Well, here's the interesting thing. Yes, everybody. So, you know, we lost our privacy, and Mark Zuckerberg made that very clear in 2010 when he was at the Crunchy Awards in San Francisco being interviewed. And he said, and this is actually what made me come back into Web 2 after Web 1 had sort of washed out. Mark Zuckerberg, and I slightly paraphrase, but you can research this very easily, everybody. He said, privacy is a social norm of the past. Now, imagine that. We live in one of the greatest republic in the world. We're a functioning democracy. Privacy is essentially a fundamental right of human beings, and certainly in a republic like ours, where you're not worried about your neighbor or your sibling spying on you and reporting to the authorities. And Mr. Zuckerberg, for his wallet, decides that privacy is dead, because that's the rise of surveillance capitalism. Now, privacy, we've sort of sacrificed our privacy. So listen, if you're thinking you've still got it, and we can get it back, by the way, but that's the second piece of this conversation. Privacy is dead because they already know who you are. So I want you to stop thinking that they don't know who you are. If you enjoy your anonymity online and things like that, forget about it. Facebook tracks everybody, whether you're on Facebook or not. Wall Street Journal reported that 8 years ago. The government knows who you are, of course. The data ecosystem knows who you are. Of course, Google knows who you are. The whole everybody knows who you are. The dark web knows who you are because all our data is for sale on the dark web. Remember Cambridge Analytica, 220 million Americans' data, purged from Facebook thanks to Facebook's, coding errors. That's all available on the dark web. You can go there and buy it today, as well. So, privacy is dead, but people are, using anonymity to their best ability, as bots and trolls do, because you can register on Facebook without actually being verified, even though they claim you have to be 13 or over. But it's well documented that a 6-year-old could register on Facebook and say that they're, 22 or 13 or 82. Facebook's not going to check. So when we talk, Gary, about, now how do we protect, and everybody, I'm just going to run right into this one. How do we protect our kids, their mental health, protect them from being tricked and gamed online by somebody who's actually a 50-year-old creep talking to a 13-year-old girl, but pretending to be a 13-year-old girl or boy? How do we stop all this? How do we restore, the fundamental mental health? How do we stop our kids from being targeted, manipulated, from boosted content, from all these things in their news feeds? How do we make sure that someone that's trying to post an opinion about our democracy or from one party, a political party or the other, is a real person instead of a bot or troll coming from an adversarial country trying to disrupt our democracy and disrupt civil discourse? Well, this is where it's time for us to consider giving up our anonymity for user ID verification, but allowing all of us law-abiding citizens to use pseudonyms. But the host companies will know who we are, and they can protect our kids and protect us from the BS of the bots and trolls trying to mess us up. Also, we have to throw TikTok into this mix because TikTok has tons of propaganda and is also funded by the Chinese government. And it's a Chinese app. This is well documented. And that's also messing with our kids' minds. So we've really got to get this straightened out, and we can take privacy back right now. Ours, Gary, we're out there, right? It's too late for us, but it's not too late for our kids and their kids and future generations. Remember, everybody, the web is a baby. It's 35 years old. This is just the beginning. So it's time for us to take corrective action and get the web, in particular, get social media right.
So, Mark, the counter argument to online IDs, and there's companies like ID.me, which actually was started to help veterans, and it's grown and grown so that people can be identified for various SaaS services, cloud-based offerings. What about social credit score systems like they have enacted in China?
Now, those are, listen to everybody. Also, if you want to be entertained for 9 minutes, I have a 9-minute TED talk called The Rise of Surveillance Capitalism. And just so you know, everybody, everything I write or broadcast is going to be entertaining because the anecdotes from this industry are rather hilarious. And I document everything. The book has 400 plus footnotes documenting from, credible sources everything that I say. Now, in this case, the Chinese, this social, sort of ranking and grading system, we're not into that. We never want to go there. But the Chinese, look, if you're, an adult and you have a good job in China and your kid spends too much time watching videos because the Chinese government's watching everything, guess what? You're probably going to lose your job and your kid is going to get penalized and therefore taken out of the upper ranking for the best colleges, etc. And this is all because they watch too many videos, or maybe they posted a joke to their friends privately, but the Chinese government watches everything. The Chinese government decides they don't like the joke. I mean, seriously, this is what's happening in China. So, and who is it? Winnie the Pooh is banned in China. Because the bear has too much of a likeness, and there were some jokes about the likeness to President Xi. So, that's not where we're headed. All we want to do is have a very, like you said, Gary, a very precise, doesn't even have to be by the government. There are independent companies that can do very precise and narrow user ID verification so that we can, and then we can use AI. Gary, this is the perfect application of AI. AI for the good guys can sniff out, the bots and trolls, the nefarious AI, all that stuff, and we can get there. It might take us a few years to perfect it, but imagine where we know who's posting hate or who's breaking the law, or who's causing trouble for our kids, bullying them. Often the bullies aren't our bots and trolls. This we've got to stop all this nonsense and take our civil discourse, take our critical thinking back, because we don't even know how to think anymore.
Now, Mark, very thought-provoking. One of the challenges when we take freedoms like what is hate speech, the specificity of it de is deterministic, and some people are pro one country or one religion, some are not. Some are pro one form of government such as socialism or communism, and others are pro capitalism. So there's some challenges in de determining what is proper content, I think, and freedom of speech. I mean, Elon Musk even talked about how, if you want to manipulate my content by not paying for ads on my site, go blank yourself. He'd rather have free speech. So what are your thoughts on how far we should take it to affect free speech? And again, is there a slippery slope?
So, restoring our sanity online, I talk about all these things. There's actually a chapter called Facts, Opinions, Lies, Who Decides? And I recently had an op-ed of the same topic in Newsweek just last week, because with the election, which has now, occurred, and luckily we're going to have a peaceful transition of power and democracy. And typical of our democracy, the pendulum swings left to right, right to left. Almost, I mean, like literally every other presidency, whether a president lasts 4 years or 8 years, there is just the pendulum. So we just watch the pendulum. But the way I write about the future of moderation, it's really critical. We want to get rid of biased moderation, which is, Musk does it, Zuckerberg does it. What we really want in the future of what I call restoration networking, restoration networks, which is also part of a, I talk a lot about what I call Web 4 in the book. It's also, these users are very active. Users are active in profit sharing. Users are active as in on the advisory board. Users are active in moderation, because you can't just have terms and conditions. And the founder, listen, it's democracy, it's free market capitalism. The founders can write their terms and conditions, but in a restoration network, if someone is censored or their posts are taken down, things like that, they can appeal it. There are going to be a jury of your peers and other systems in place. And this is part of what I call the restoration networking constitution. To qualify as a restoration network, we're going to do the very best to make sure that moderation is absolutely neutral. It's Look, really, inciting violence is pretty straightforward. Some people think it's not, but if you post that this group of people should be killed, well, that looks like inciting violence. We just get rid of that gray area that, and again, Zuckerberg, Musk, everybody has these executives have their flavors, and we really need to curtail that so that people can just enjoy. From all sides, can enjoy civil discourse, can trust moderation, no matter what opinion they have, that it's fair, even-handed, and adheres to very strict standards, and the juries of their peers are making sure that that happens. Also, in Web 4, you can vote with your feet. Right now, we're stuck. The network effect. Where are you going to go from X? Maybe you can go to Dorsey's Blue Sky, but there's not a lot of activity there yet. Maybe you can go to Threads, but that's just a Facebook product. So we're stuck in this network effect of, half the people in the world are on Facebook, Meta, and it's sort of like, so we're going to have to get to the point. And the inventor of the web, Sir Tim Berners-Lee, who is a friend of mine and has been an advisor of mine for about 15 years, he's invented a new system called pods. Our data is stored in these pods, not stored up in a centralized data ecosystem where everything we do anywhere is funneled into the massive aggregated data ecosystem. Instead, we control it and we have data portability. We can pull, this is where the web is going to go, everybody. This is what restoration networking is about. We're going to be able to move our content. So if we don't like a site, we download our content, we move it into a new free market. We're going to inspire entrepreneurs, and then we'll upload it to a site that we think is doing the right thing, especially if they have the stamp of approval of what I call restoration networking.
So if we're going to start to reclaim our privacy, this is a great conversation. How do you feel, Mark, about strong encryption and backdoors and keys in government agencies' hands?
Listen, this is where, Gary, you and I haven't talked about this, but who is one of the biggest heroes in the privacy movement? People have forgotten. It's Tim Cook.
Tim Cook. I was going to say Phil Zimmerman, PGP.
It's Tim Cook. It's Tim Cook from several years ago when the FBI came, got a hold of a terrorist phone, an iPhone, and then went to Apple and said, "Crack this for us. You got to open it up because it's encrypted. You got to get this conversation." And Tim Cook, the CEO of Apple, said, "No effing way." So there are plenty of ways to catch bad guys. There are plenty of ways that work. This is well documented. And we've got to protect. And look, if an encrypted conversation has a backdoor, then it's not private. So, this is where, we take our privacy back. Now in social media, the word social is there. So you're wanting to be social. By the way, everybody, if you happen to be on WhatsApp, you might want to consider shifting to Signal or Telegram because WhatsApp is owned by Facebook, and Facebook already in their terms and conditions, they already tell you very clearly that they're grabbing as much data from you on WhatsApp as they can. Where you are, who you're talking to, when, et cetera. They just can't crack, get inside the conversation, but they can get everything else about what you're doing in that moment, who you're talking to, et cetera. So that would be a good move is to get off WhatsApp.
Mark, great advice. And Tim Cook is a hero in many ways. I heard he called Zuckerberg up and said, "You've got to fix the Facebook app, or we're taking it out of the Apple store because you are calling the GPS geolocation function as many times in milliseconds as possible. You're calling it so much that you're draining the batteries on our phone. And why do you need, geolocation of your users in below split second timing?" And I think Zuckerberg might have said, "I want to know when they're walking into the bathroom. We might give them an ad for toilet paper." That's a little bit too invasive for me, wouldn't you say, Mark?
Here's the thing, everybody. I'm laughing, but I can believe that's the data that Mr. Zuckerberg wants because remember, as we said, we're the product that he sells. So you could argue that he's actually doing a great job with capitalism as long as he would be clear with us, users, that we're actually not his customer. Now, he would just flat out say that, "Listen, everybody, you're not my customer. You're actually the product I'm selling." That would be really wonderfully honest, and then we could make decisions based on those data points.
Yeah, that's a great point. Microsoft switched from the business model of selling Windows to free downloads and installs, and even using your computer to share bandwidth to get updates and downloads all across the globe. And of course, I knew there must be something in there, some kind of social angle, social agent. And of course, there was Cortana, now Bing, and their AI wants to know everything you're doing. So you have become the product. The free product of Windows has turned the users into the product.
It's interesting you mentioned Bing because most people now don't realize, but we've been boxed into Google and the government. Listen, everybody, no matter what you think about the government, we need the government because capitalism is a great economic system, but it has one fundamental issue, and that is that a successful capitalism, remember, capitalism is all based on, coming up with a great product or service, delighting your customer, and then you're going to get a large market share. But there's the issue. You also get hundreds of millions of dollars of investment capital, and then you start boxing out your competitors and you become a monopoly. And as soon as an industry becomes monopolistic, actually the free market stops working. And the free market is critical to a highly functioning capitalist economy. And so, we mentioned Bing. I'm coming back to that. Just a few weeks ago, the government, which it takes a long time to prosecute antitrust, in their case against Google, Google was found guilty of antitrust infringement in a huge way because they boxed out everybody, even Bing. And so we're going to see some changes. And the government is also in the midst of the case with Meta, in which I've been deposed and testified, by the government, by Meta's lawyers, by Quinn Emanuel on behalf of the consumers, because Meta basically took all their competitors out. They either acquired them or drove them out of business. In the government's case, this is personal social media, particularly with Facebook, with government's targeting. There's just Snap and MeWe are the only ones left. Facebook has literally destroyed, the sort of free market, and this is what happens when you become massively funded, and then investors won't fund startups to compete with you.
Absolutely. And I'm wondering, in restoring our sanity online, probably my last question is sanity. So it's insanity to be online. And what's happening to our kids with social media behavior, TikTok and dopamine? I'm just curious, is it good for our mental health? Is it bad for our mental health? Where do we fit on sanity online and social media?
Well, in Web One, the whole vision was that it was good. Remember, the Web One vision was also that we would have a 4-day work week. Turns out the more technology we have to help us work, the more we work. Oops, sorry, everybody. My apologies on that because I'm, one of the guys who was there in Web One. I wish we had 4-day work weeks. Here's the thing. Social media and this great technology can actually be healthy for us, can be. The idea of being better connected with our family and our friends, and great people around the world, being able to stay connected. That was the whole idea of Web One. And that was actually the whole idea for me when I built Super Family and Super Friends. It's just great because email is ghastly, and it was ghastly 25 years ago. It's like one-dimensional. You can't understand what's the emotion behind the message, what's the person really thinking. And so it can be good for our mental health in appropriate dosages, time frames for our kids, the dopamine. So here's the thing. In Sweden, everybody, the government and the Pediatric Association just issued a regulation they want supported. It's not exactly law yet, but it's a strong recommendation that no kid under two see a screen. I mean,
Wow.
not a phone, not a television. And the reason is that the studies are so compelling now about the addictiveness of screens. And we know this already. Even if you grew up with TVs and telephones on the wall, your parents had to regulate those. Otherwise, you would have been on them all day. Well, now kids have, more screens accessible. And it's if you think that you're making your life better by giving your toddler or infant a phone so that you can enjoy your dinner, you're creating potentially a lifetime of issues for them and for you as a parent. So stop. And also role model. So for our kids, first of all, Jonathan Haidt, who is very, very prominent right now with the Anxious Generation, he says 16 is the age that kids should get their first phone. Now, I love the idea. I'm not sure it's realistic. I think user ID verification and 13 as the age that you can register, but now there's no targeting, no boosted content, no ads, so that you're really only connecting to your friends, online. I think that's going to be the sanest idea until you're 18, when you can first be targeted. But with data protection laws coming, remember, there's the Kids Online Safety Act that already passed the Senate. There's the American Privacy Rights Act. We've got to get these across the finish line. And I'll be writing a piece about this, hopefully inspiring the Trump administration to finish the job on these because they're bipartisan. So we got to protect our kids. You've got to keep them, a phone is, the smartphone, as Gary and I were talking about before the show, is really a computer. It just happens to have a phone icon on it with amongst many other icons. That's what kids see. Don't think YouTube is safe for your kids. Don't think TikTok is safe for your kids. Don't think Instagram is safe for your kids. You got to watch. You got to keep phones out of bedrooms. You got to keep phones away from mealtimes. And you can do this, parents. And schools are helping because we've got to have kids keep their phones in their backpacks or not on campus through high school. We can do this, everybody.
Mark, that is great advice. Is there anything else you want to share with our viewers or listeners that we haven't covered?
Everybody, there's a lot to cover. So again, if you have a moment, Restoring Our Sanity Online, a revolutionary social framework. I think you're going to be vastly entertained. Also, it's punchy. It's 21 chapters in 155 pages. So the idea is you can thumb through, get a good, a good meal from, very quickly, have a good chuckle and see what you can do. There are punch lists throughout on what you can do right now while we're moving into this next generation of social media. And we're all part of it. So it's time for us to stop feeling like we have no power. We have all the power. Let's take it back.
What great advice. Folks, if you want to get one step ahead of the online insanity threat, the social media threat, learn from one of the inventors of social media, the author of this great book, Restoring Our Sanity Online. Mark is found online at www.markweinsteininventor.com. That's Mark, Weinstein, inventor.com. We'll have it on the screen. Visit him online. Email him. Mark, your email is mark at
RestoreTheWeb.com.
mark at rest
MARK at RestoreTheWeb.com.
Very cool. Not only restoring social media, but restoring the web. Mark at restoretheweb.com.
You've been listening to Cyber Defense Radio. Stay tuned next time for another amazing and informative episode. CyberDefenseRadio.com is proudly part of the Cyber Defense Media Group, where InfoSec knowledge is power.
Cyber Defense TV and Cyber Defense Radio have launched 24/7/365 live streams. Visit them online today at cyberdefense.tv and cyberdefense.radio with your host and globally recognized cybersecurity expert and my good friend, Gary Milewski.